Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Ted Zion with Bet, two lines from the bottom. Amar Rabba, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Shmuel Bar Marta, Gadol Talmud Torah Yoter Mikibud Aveim. So this is the end of a series of Gadol Talmud Torah. We saw that Gadol Talmud Torah Yoter Mi'atzalat Nefashot, Gadol Talmud Torah Yoter Mi'binyan Beit Mikdash, and this was the final one, which was Gadol Talmud Torah Yoter Mikibud Aveim. Shekol Otan Shanim Shayu Yaakov Avinu Beit Ever Lo Ne'anash. All those years that Yaakov was found in the Beit Midrash of Aver, he does not get punished for. Damar bar. So now we have a calculation as to the fact that Yaakov disappears for 14 years. Now let's start out with what we know about the life of Yaakov, and then we have to deal with what the Gemara adds for us. The Torah gives us a certain amount of information from which we can calculate the years of Yaakov or when things transpired. The Gemara here is going to give us an additional piece of information. That additional piece of information will cause there to be a problem, and that problem will be solved by saying that Yaakov Avinu was in the Beit Midrash of Aver for 14 years. So we know that Yaakov descends to Mitzrayim when he's 130 years old, because he says when he comes before Paro, Paro asks him, "How old are you?" And he says, "I'm 130 years old." We also know with regards to Yosef, they have a number of years that we know about his lifetime, which is, first of all, when he's brought before Paro, he is 30 years old. And when he leaves his father's house, when his brothers sell him down to Mitzrayim, he's 17 years old at that time. Now, with regards to how long between the time that Yosef becomes the Mishneh LaMelech until Yaakov descends to Mitzrayim, I mean, that he reveals himself to his brothers, that's 9 years. We know that because you have the 7 years of Sova, 7 years of plenty, and then 2 years of famine until Yosef reveals himself to his brother. So that's 9 years. So Yosef, at the time that his father descends to Mitzrayim, is 39 years old. So if we go a little bit backwards then, that means that Yosef is born when Yaakov is 91 years old. When Yaakov is 91 years old, that's when Yosef is born. 39 years later, that's when Yosef is found in front of Paro as the Mishneh LaMelech and reveals himself to his brothers, and that's when Yaakov descends to Mitzrayim. In addition to that, we know that Yaakov, in the house of Lavan, that he worked 7 years for Rachel, 7 years for Leah, and in addition to that, he spends an additional 6 years there working to accumulate the wealth that he has. But we know that that happens at the time that Yosef is born. Because at the time that Yosef is born, Yaakov is ready to leave and go home. And then Lavan convinces him to stay. So that means that the birth of Yosef, that's after Yaakov has completed the 14 years of working for Rachel and Leah. That means that Yaakov gets to the house of Lavan when he is 77 years old. That's 14 years prior to the 91 that we calculated is when Yosef is born. So we know that 77 years old, that's when Yaakov gets to the house of Lavan. Now that's as far as we know in terms of information from the Torah. What we don't know is what transpired in the years before that. You would assume, based on the story in Chumash, that Yaakov comes to the house of Lavan somewhere close to after when he had the altercation with his brother Esav and he took the bracha from Esav, because he runs away in response to the fact that Esav wants to kill him because of that bracha, and his mother and father send him to go to Lavan to run away, to get a wife, and to give some time for the situation to cool down. So you would assume that it was close to that time period, which would mean around when he is 77 years old. So that's where the Gemara is going to differ and give us information that says that the bracha took place at a different time. And that's what's going to open up this difference in timing, which is, Damarmar, Lama Nimnu Shnotav Shel Yishmael. Why does the Torah enumerate the years of Yishmael's life? Kedei Lecheis Behem Shnotav Shel Yaakov. Because it helps us understand the years of Yaakov. Dichtiv, as it says, Ve'elu Shnei Chaye Yishmael, Ma'at Shana Shloshim Shana V'Sheve Shanim. This is the life of Yishmael. His years were 137 years old. Kama Kashish Yishel Ishmael mi Yitzchak. How much older is Ishmael from Yitzchak? 14 shanin. 14 years. Dichtiv. Avram ben 80 shana v'sheish shanim beledet agar et Ishmael. Avram's 86 at the birth of Ishmael to the Avram. Uchtiv. And it says Avram ben me'at shana v'veled lo et Yitzchak beno. And when Yitzchak's born, he's 100. So there's a 14-year gap between Ishmael and Yitzchak. Uchtiv. And we know that Yitzchak gives birth to Yaakov when he is 60 years old. He gets married at 40, and he has the twins when he is 60. It says, Yitzchak ben shishim shana beledet otam. So Yitzchak is 60 at the birth of Yaakov and Esav. So at that time, bar kama hava Yishmael, ki itilid Yaakov. How old is Yishmael when Yaakov is born? Well, if Yitzchak is 60 when he gives birth to Yaakov, and Yishmael is 14 years older, bar shivim barba, 60 plus 14 is 74. So kaima paishin mishne, how much is left over from his lifetime? It's 137 years, minus the 74. So what remains of his lifetime at that point in time is shittin v'tlat, 63 years are left in the lifetime of Yishmael. V'tanya, and here is the important braita that gives us information about how old Yaakov is. It says, Haya, Tanya, Haya Yaakov Avinu Bisha, Shenitbarach Me'aviv ben Shishim Veshalosh Shana. Yaakov is 63 years old at the time that he receives the bracha. If you remember when we did the calculation based on what the Torah gives us, we would assume it was around 77. Here the Braita says it's actually 63 when he receives the bracha. Boba Perek mate Yishmael. And that was the same time period when Yishmael died. Because at the birth of Yaakov, Ishmael is 74 years old. He dies 63 years later at 137 years old. That is the period in which the bracha is given to Yaakov, dichtiv. So Yaakov, Esav at that point sees that Yitzchak gives instructions to Yaakov and gives him a bracha and sends him off to go get a wife from his family. So then Esav does the same thing. He already married earlier. We know that from before the story of the brachot, because his wives were a korat ruach to Yitzchak and Rivka. So now at this point he switches over and goes back to family. He goes to Ishmael, v'ikach et machlat bat Ishmael. He marries the daughter of Ishmael, machlat, achot nevayot, the sister of Nevayot. V'masha shenemar bat Ishmael, if she is the daughter of Ishmael and Yodesh, she achot nevayot, then obviously her brother is Nevayot. Mlameit, shekidsha Ishmael umeit. Ishmael betrothed her, gave her over to be betrothed. Umeit, and he dies. Visia Nevayot achia. The Nevayot, her brother, finishes off, or marries off, does the nisuin for her. So that means that Ishmael died at that point in time. And the Gemara is associating that, the marriage of Esav to Machlat, at the same time period as when the bracha, or the incident with the brachot took place, where Yaakov takes the bracha from Esav. So, when is that? If Yishmael passed away, we know that's when Yaakov is 63 years old. Shishitin vitlat. So now, we can stop there. We know, based on our calculations, that Yaakov, we thought, was 77. Here the Gemara says 63. There's a 14-year gap. That 14-year gap, the Gemara is going to tell us, was the time period that Yaakov disappears. We don't have a calculation for it. Those 14 years are when he is in the Beit Midrash of Aver. The Gemara is going to go about the calculation the same way we did, just in reverse, but it's going to start from 63. And it's going to say this, Shitin v'tlat, say, if he's 63 when the brachot are taken, then var beisar dimitiad leid Yosef. There's 14 years until the time Yosef is born, because he goes to the house of Levan and he works there for 7 years and 7 years. At that point, Yosef is born, and he's ready to leave. So that's 14 years. 14 years plus 63 is the 77 that we talked about. Hashivim v'shiva. Then it says, Yosef ben shloshim shana b'amdo lifnei paro. Yosef is 30 years old when he pulled out of the boar, and he goes before paro. Ha meya v'sheva. So if you add on 30 to 74, you end up with, to 77, you end up with 107. So, then you have Shev de Shiva, Vetarte de Kafno. Then you have the 7 years of plenty, the 2 years of famine. That's an additional 9 years. Hamea Vishitzar, that's 116. So technically, Yaakov should have been 116 when he comes down to Mitzrayim, Uchtiv. But what do we know? Vayomer Parol Yaakov, Kama Yemei Shnei Chayecha. Vayomer Yaakov, El Parol Yemei Shnei Migurai, Shloshim Umachana. They're 130. I'm 130. So Magar says, no, Mea Vishitzar haven't. He was 116. So why is he 116 if he's telling Paro he's 130? The 14 years that he is away in the Beit Midrash of Aver, those aren't counted here. If you do that, that would postpone the whole count from 63 to 77, because you spend 14 years in the house of Aver, and then the calculation would be similar to ours, which is if you start at 77, you get to 130 when he stands before Paro. Now the Gemara's creation, the problem is created, or the missing 14 years are created because of the assumption that the brachot took place at 63. That's what the Braita added. So without the Braita, we would have just assumed that the brachot took place at 77, and these 14 years don't exist. But the fact that we have a Braita that tells us that Yaakov got the brachot at 63, that's what opens up the problem, and that's why we have to explain the missing 14 years. So the Gemara explains them as being that Yaakov is in the Beit Aver on his way to Lavan's house. He stops for 14 years to learn. And then it says that he doesn't get punished for that. The Tanya, Haya Yaakov beBeit Aver, Mutman Arbaas Rishana. He was learning there for 14 years. Aver Meit, Lachar Shired Yaakov Avinu Aram Naraim Shtei Shanim. Aver himself dies 2 years after Yaakov ends up in Aram Naraim, meaning when Yaakov is 79 years old. Because Yitzam Misham Uvado Aram Naraim, when he leaves after 14 years, he goes to Aram Naraim. Nitzam Shemar Al Be'er Ben Shivim V'Sheva Shana. When he's at the Be'er, meaning when he meets Rachel by the house of Lavan, he's 77 years old. When he's 79, that's when Aver passes away. That you can calculate. Actually, the Torah gives us that information based on if you add up all the years of the lives of the individuals from the time of Noach till that period of time, you'll see that Aver lives until the point where Yaakov is 79 years old. So all of that we can corroborate. The only thing that we can't corroborate, which is given to us by the Braita, is the fact that the brachot took place at 63 at the death of Yishmael. And that's what opens up these 14 years that Yaakov learned by the Beit Medrash of Aver. Minala and Lo Mi'anish. So now how do we know that he wasn't punished for those 14 years that he was by Aver? The Tanya Nimtza Yosef Shepirish Me'aviv 22 Shana. That Yosef leaves his father for 22 years. Remember, Yosef is sold by the brothers down to Mitzrayim when he is 17 years old. And we know that he appears before Paro when he's 30, and he reveals himself to the brothers when he's 39. Because you have 7 years of plenty and 2 years of famine before he reveals himself to the brothers. 39 minus 17 is 22 years. That means that Yosef is missing from Yaakov for those 22 years. And the Gemara says that those 22 years are keneged Shem Shepirish Yaakov Avinu Me'aviv. The same 22 years that Yaakov left his father. Yaakov, Tlatin Vishitin Avion. Wait a minute, Yaakov didn't leave his father for 22 years, he actually left him for 36 years. Ella, Arbeisar, the Hava Beit Aver Lo Chashiv Lo, those 14 years that he was in the Beit Midrash are not counted against him. So, the Gemara here assumes that he left at 63, and then he only returns much later on, 36 years later, when he is 99 years old. Gemara says, wait a minute, that's not exactly true, because Sof Sof, the Beit Lavan, Esrim Shnin Avin. He was only in Beit Lavan for 20 years. So why are you counting here 22 years? Because we know that he worked 7 years for Rachel and Leah, so that's 14 years. After Yosef is born, he asks to leave. Lavan convinces him to stay. He stays for an additional 6 years at that point. That means that he's in Beit Lavan for a total of 20 years. He's in Beit Lavan for 20 years, and he got there when he was 77. That means that he gets back to Yitzchak when he's 97, not when he's 99. So Mara wants to know, where did those other 2 years come from? It takes him 2 years to travel back. Not literally that it takes 2 years, but he takes 2 years to travel back, and there's a delay in his return to Yitzchak, the Tanya. Yatzami Aram Naraim Uvalo Lesukot. He leaves Aram Naraim and comes to Sukkot. Vasasham 18 chodesh, and he's 18 chodesh. He's there for 18 months. Shenemar veYaakov nasa Sukkota veYivin lo bayit ulemikneu asa Sukkot. So the way he makes a sukkah, then he builds a house, and then he makes a sukkah. So the way that Chazal darshan is that sukkah is the living quarters of the summer, and the bayit is the living quarters of the winter. So you see that he had sukkah, bayit, sukkah. So that means a winter, summer, winter, which is an 18-month duration. And in Beit El, he was there for 6 months when he brought the korbanot, and he fulfills his neder to Hashem, that if he returns safely, that he'll bring the korbanot, and he'll make this Evan into a makom of Avodat Hashem. So there he waits 2 years on the way back. It takes him 2 years of travel time back to Yitzchak, again, because he stops in these places. And that is a total of 22 years. So he only gets back to Yitzchak when he is 99 years old. That he is punished for. And therefore, Yosef leaves him from the age of 17 to 39 for 22 years. But again, Chazal, who believed the bracha took place at 63, then there was an additional 14 years that he was away from his father. Why isn't he punished for that? That's the Gemara's proof here that Gadol Talmud Torah Yoter Mikibud Aveim, that he is granted a dispensation here not to be punished for the lack of Kibud Aveim during those 14 years because he was learning Torah. Therefore, Talmud Torah is greater than Kibud Aveim. Okay, with that, we end the first parak. Adran Alach Mikla Nikret. Now we begin the second parak. Now the second parak is a more halachic view of the Megillah. Along with that, we bump into other items that, along with the Megillah, that have the similar halachot. So the first one is, HaKoreh et HaMegillah LeMafreya Lo Yatza. Someone who reads the Megillah out of order is not Yotze. Kara Al Peh, if he reads it by heart. Kara Targum, if he reads it in Targum, Bechol Lashon, or Bechol Lashon, or in any language. So it seems to hear that Targum is an example of a language that he could have read. And here he reads it not only in Targum, but he reads it in any language. As Rashi says, Zu, Vein Tzarech Lomar Zu Ktani. It's a Rashi later on Daf Yud Chet. He says that, of course, if he read a Targum, he's not Yotze. Then certainly with other languages, then he won't be Yotze. Aval Korim Otado Lo Azot Bilaz. People who speak a foreign language, you can read it in their language. Valuaz Shishama Shirit Yatza, and someone who speaks another language that heard it in Hebrew, they are Yotze the Megillah. Obviously, there's a problem here. We just said before you can't read it in another language, and now all of a sudden we're saying if it's your language, then you can read it. So the Gemara will have to reconcile between that problem and the Mishnah. Karas Sirugim, if he read it sections in sections, Umit Namneim, and he's dozing off, and he's dozing off, Yatza. So it wasn't read in a single time in a consecutive manner, but rather he reads it, takes a pause, takes a break, dozes off a little bit, and then continues to read it. That's fine. Haya kodva, dorsha, umigiyah. If he was writing a Megillah, he was doresh the Megillah, or he was correcting a Megillah. Imki ven libo, yatza. If he has kavanah, he's yotze. Vim lav, lo yatza. He doesn't have kavanah, he's not yotze. Now this is interesting because this seems to imply from the Mishnah, it's pretty clear here, that mitzvot, tzrichot, kavanah. Yet, the Gemara never brings this Mishnah as a proof anywhere, that mitzvot, tzrichot, kavanah. So many of the Rishonim deal with the fact that here, the requirement of kavanah is ledivrei hakol. Everybody agrees on it. The Ran discusses this in other places, but mentions the reason that is because here he's being korah, he's doing it in order to fix the Megillah, or read the Megillah to write it. And in that case, he does not read it like the way it's supposed to be read. He reads it al yidei aktiv, instead of al yidei akri. And so therefore, he's not going to be Yotze, because he's not reading it for the proper pronunciation of the words. He's reading it to get the proper spelling of the words. And that's why he's not Yotze. Others disagree with the Ran and say that that's okay. That takes care of some of the examples here. But the Mishnah also mentions Dorsha, that he's being Doreshit. So why shouldn't he be Yotze in that case? So others suggest over here with regards to Megillah, the Megillah has an additional aspect to it that is not there by other mitzvot, and that's the necessity for Pesume Nisa. So whereas by other mitzvot, you may not require a Kavanah, over here by Megillah, you need Kavanah. Not necessarily Kavanah for the mitzvah, but Kavanah in order to create or generate the Pesume Nisa that is associated with the Megillah. And that's the Kavanah that the Mishnah is explaining or looking for over here, not the standard Kavanah, which we're talking about, whether you need Kavanah b'mitzvot or ain't Kavanah b'mitzvot. Hayta k'tuva b'sam, u'b'sikra, u'b'kumus, u'b'kan k'tum. So if it's written in any of these inks, and we'll get to what they are in tomorrow's daf, al niyar v'al diftira, or if it's written on paper or on diftira, we'll see again what type of hide that is, lo yatza. None of those are considered to be a proper Megillah. Hashtag tuva shurit, until it's written in Hebrew, ala sefer ubidyo, on klaf, and written in this dyo, the type of ink, or proper type of ink, that is kasher for writing a Megillah, for writing a sefer Torah. So all of that we'll discuss in tomorrow's daf. Today we're going to discuss the beginning of the Mishnah, which is Menahani Milei. Where does this come from? So how do you know the fact that Akorea Tamigilah the Mafreya lo yatsa? If you read it out of order, that you're not the Yotze. Why is the Mishnah assume that that's the case, or how does the Mishnah know that that is the case? So where it says, Amarova Damakra, the Pasuk says, Kich davam uchizmanam, the way that they are written, and in their times. My zmanam limafreya, when it comes to zmanam limafreya lo, you can't have time out of order. By definition, time is in order. So just like time is in order, ach davam limafreya lo. So too, the writing cannot be out of order, but it must be in order. So that's why we know that the writing cannot be done limafreya. So Gemara says, Midai kriya ktiva hochi. Wait, our Mishnah says, Hakorea tamigilah lemafreya. You're talking about ktiva. You brought me a proof, right, that it's talking about asiya ktiva. That we're talking about the doing of the Megillah, but not the ktiva of the Megillah. Tichtiv, the yot osim et shnei hayamim. So it says, in order to make these days. So we're not talking about the reading of the Megillah. We're not talking necessarily even about the writing of the Megillah. We're talking about the creation of Purim. El mihocha. Must be from here. Dechtiv. Vayamim ha'ele nizkarim v'na'asim. Itkash zichira. Zichira now already is talking about the reading of the Megillah. That's the mentioning of Purim. La'asiya. To the asiya. Ma'asiya l'mafreya lo. Just like asiya is not done out of order. Av zichira l'mafreya lo. So too, the asiya is not out of order. So now we have a proof that the fact that the zechira cannot be out of order, because we have the proof that the asiya can't be out of order, partly because asiya itself inherently cannot be over. When you do something, it's done in order. But also, more importantly, we saw before that the asiya was connected to the zman, to time. And just like time has order to it, so too does the asiya. And the asiya connects to the kriya, the zechira, and therefore the transitive property teaches us that they all have to be in order. So everything has to be done, not limafrei. You have to read the Megillah in a sequential manner. You can't read it out of order. So now, the Gemara adds over here, Tano, v'chein b'halel, v'chein b'kriyat shema, u'b'tfilah. That there are three other instances where this din is true, that you must do it in order. You must read the halel in order, you must read kriyat shema in order, and you must daven shmoneh esrei in order. So now the Gemara wants to understand each one of these items. How do we know that that's the case? Halel minalan. How do we know that halel has been done in order? Rabba Amar dichvitiv, because it says these are psukim recording from halel. Mimizrach shemesh ad mavolo mulal shem Hashem. So the halel to shem Hashem is like mizrach shemesh ad mavolo, from the sun, the rise of the sun in the east until it comes, I mean until it sets in the west. So just like when the sun, the movement of the sun, or the rising and setting of the sun always happen in the same order, so too, Malal Shem Hashem, so too, the Halel of Hashem should be in order, and not out of order. Rav Yosef Amar, he says, Zer Yom Asa Hashem. So just like the day is in order, so too over here, the Halel must be done in order. Zer Yom Asa Hashem, Nagilah V'Nismecha Bo. So that celebration, that rejoicement, that saying of Hallel is like the day. Just like the day, which is time, is always chronologically in order. So too, the Hallel must be in order. Rav Yamar, Yehi Shem Hashem Mivorach. Now we're going to get to the end of the Pasuk again afterwards, which is Mi'atav Yadulam. But Yehi here says, Behav Yatanyehe, that it should be in the way that it is written. So when you're Mivorach, when you bless Hashem, when you say positive things towards Hashem, then Yehi, they have to be b'haviyatan, they have to be in order. Because that pasuk ends, Yehi Shem Hashem Mivorach, Me'ata V'ad Olam. From now and forever. So again, a mention of time in the context of Yehi Shem Hashem Mivorach, that the Shem Hashem should be blessed. So again, the need or necessity for Hallel to be said in order. Kriyat Shema. How do you know that Kriyat Shema must be said in order? Tatanya, Kriyat Shema kichtava divrei rabbi. Kriyat Shema must be read in the way that it is written, meaning Lashon HaKodesh, must be read in Hebrew. That's Rabbi's opinion. Chachamim say you can read Kriyat Shema in any language. So my time with the Rabbi, what's the reasoning behind Rabbi's position? Amar Kro, the Pasuk says, V'hayu ha-divarim ha-eide, V'hayu b'avyatan yehu. They have to be exactly the way they are. Rabban and my time, what's the reasoning behind the Rabbanan's position that you can do it in any language? Amar Kro, Shema, Shema Yisrael. B'chol ha-shon sh'ata shomea. Any language that you understand, that you can hear, that is sufficient, or that is proper for you to be yotze the mitzvah of Kriyat Shema. For Rabbi Nami Haktiv Shema, what does Rabbi do with the word Shema? Hami Baidele Hashmeel Aznecha, Mashata Motzim Mipicha, that you must hear that which you say. And when you say Kriyat Shema, you should say it in a manner loud enough that you're able to hear it yourself. Not only are you saying it in your mind or by yourself, but you must also hear what you're saying. Rabbanan Savrei Kamanda Amar Akureta Shema V'lo Yishmeel Ozno Yatza. That the person who reads the Shema and is unable to hear himself saying it, he's still Yotze. Now again, they agree, the Chatchilo, that you should do it in a manner that you can hear yourself saying the Shema. But if you don't do that, then you're still Yotze. B'diavad, you are Yotze Kriyat Shema. So the man says, Rabbanan Nami Aktiv Vayu. Doesn't the Rabbanan also have the word Vayu, which means B'aviyatan Yehei, that they have to be exactly like this? Where it says, Ha'u Mibailesh Lo Yikarei Lemafreya, that he doesn't read them out of order. So here's the source of the fact, Vayu teaches you that you can't read Kriyat Shema out of order. Rabbi Shlo Yikarei Lemafreya Minole. What about Rabbi? How does Rabbi know that you can't read out of order? Dvarim Hadvarim. Vayu Hadvarim. Aile. So Hadvarim, that Hey, that teaches you it has to be in order. Rabbanan Dvarim Hadvarim Lo Mashmalahu. They don't think there's a drasha from that Hey in Hadvarim, and therefore they don't have to deal with that at all. Rabbi has the additional drasha because he believes that that is worthy of a drasha. So you see from here that the Rabbanan believe, number one, you can say Kriyat Shema in any language. Number two is it must be in order. Number three is that you should hear yourself saying the Kriyat Shema, but it's not ma'akev, your ability to say Kriyat Shema. On the other hand, Rabbi believes you have to say Kriyat Shema in Lashon HaKodesh, in Hebrew. You have to, Hashmeel Aznecha, you have to actually hear what you're saying when you say Kriyat Shema, and he agrees that it must be in order. And as Tosafot points out over here, Dinira Dalocha Kechachamim. It sounds like here that Dalocha is like the Chachamim. Chara Diyachid Rabbi Malocha Krabim. Because you have a Machloket Rabbi and the Chachamim, then generally the Dalocha is like the Chachamim. You go after the Rove. Vote that the Rabbanan over here are similar to the opinion in the Gemara in Brachot that according to Shema L'Shmi L'Zno Yatza. In the second paragraph of Brachot, there the Gemara concludes like the Tanakhama Rabbi Yossi that says that same position, or has that position against Rabbi Yossi over there. So just like that in Gemara and Brachot, we say that, B'diavad, it's not me'akev, Yishmeel Aznecha, so the Rabbanan hold like that opinion, so it makes sense that the Halacha here is like the Rabbanan, which is that you can say Shema in any language, that you don't have to hear what you say by yourself, again, at least, B'diavad, L'chatchila Yishud, and that it cannot be read out of order. Now, the Gemara makes or draws some conclusions for this. Lemeka Sava Rabbi, let's assume that Rabbi believes Kol HaTorah Kula B'Kol Lashon Emra, that the Torah was written or given in every language. Ditzak Adatcho B'Lashon HaKodesh, if you think the Torah was only given in Hebrew, so Nemra, Lama Leila Demichta Vayu, why do I need a specific directive by Shema to say that it must be in Hebrew? If the Torah was only given in Hebrew, or only said over in Hebrew, then of course the Shema can only be said in Hebrew. The fact that he has Vayu to come and narrow the possibilities by Shema means that there's a much broader palette of languages that are involved in the Torah prior to that point. He says, no, Itztrich, you know, he needs it. Sakadatcha Shema ki Rabbonon. That maybe you would learn the Shema like the Rabbonon. Ketov Rachman Vayu. That's why the Torah came along to say Vayu, to limit that and not to think like the Rabbonon. So now the Gemara tries to infer the same thing in reverse with the Chachamim. Lema kasavi Rabbonon kol Torah v'lashon HaKodesh Nemra. The whole Torah was only said in Hebrew. If you think in any language, Nemra, then why do I need a specific, again, directive by Shema to tell you can do it in any language if, of course, the whole Torah was given in every language? Must be that the Torah is a narrower scope, and this is the exception to the rule by Shema. It says, no, again, itztrich, you need it. That they would learn Vayu Karabi, that only B'Lashon HaKodesh, Katav Rachman HaShema, so therefore you have Shema to offset it. So the question of which way you emphasize whether Shema Vayu, but that's not definitive about what you view the language of the Torah. Now, what does it mean that the Torah is written in Lashon HaKodesh, or the Torah is written in many languages? So Rashi over here says, B'chol Lashon Nemra, Likrota B'chol Lashon, to read it in every language. There's a question, can you read the Torah in Hebrew? Or can you read the Torah in any language? Tosafot raises an issue right away. What do you mean that what you can read it in? The Kriyat HaTorah is a din derabonon. There's no din doraita of Kriyat HaTorah. So why are we talking about the Torah, again, on a doraita level, what language you can read it in, when there isn't a doraita mitzvah in which you have to read it? So therefore, he says, Tosafot comes up with a modified view of this. He says there is, obviously, a kriya, one kriya, which is midoraita, which is Pashat Zachor. But he says, V'nira dahachi perusha, kol kriya sheba Torah. Anytime the Torah mandates that you read something, condone. What are the examples of that? Mitzvat chalitza, Pashat Egel Arufa, Vidui Maser, Bikurim. All the times that the Torah makes a demand on you that you must read a paragraph or a section of the Torah, in that case, what is the language that can be used in that instance? Is the language that can be used in that instance Hebrew? Or is it B'chol Lashon? And that's what the argument here is. Basically, that's what Rashi means, that the Krota B'chol Lashon, whether you can read it in any language, you can only read it in Hebrew. It's not a reference to Kriata Torah, it's a reference to Kriya in the Torah. Anytime the Torah demands that you read something, what is the definition of that reading? Right, that's the way Rashi and Tosafot, modified by Tosafot, reads or learns this sugya. The Ritva, other Rishonim, suggest that the machloket here is whether a Torah written in other languages has a status of Torah. Does it have Kedushat Sefer Torah? So is Kedushat Sefer Torah only applicable by Lashon HaKodesh? Or is Kedushat Sefer Torah also applicable by other languages? And that's what the Gemara is discussing over here about the languages issue. Others say that the question is about what language was the Torah given in at Har Sinai. Was it given in Hebrew? Was it given in all languages? Was it given in a different language? And that's the question that the Gemara is trying to address over here. And others suggest that might have an afkamin in terms of what language did Moshe learn the Torah in. Did he learn it in Hebrew from Hashem, or did he learn it in some other languages? And that might have an afkamin as to what language we should be learning the Torah in. If Moshe learned it in Hebrew, then we should be learning it in Hebrew. If he learned it in some other language, then maybe we should be learning it either in that language, or maybe language doesn't matter anymore with regards to learning Torah. Those are a number of possibilities of the Rishonim explaining what exactly the Gemara is pondering over here in terms of the Torah being either B'Lashon HaKodesh or in multiple Lishonot. Now, the Gemara says, Tefillah Minolon. So we're going to spend the rest of today discussing this issue, is how do you know that Tefillah has to be in order? Titania, Shimon Apikoli is dear 18 brachot lifnei Rabban Gamliel al Seder Yavne. The Shimon Apikoli put together the 18 in the order that they are before Rabban Gamliel in the Yavne. The Gemara later on will ask, because we're going to in a second say that it was in the case, it was the Anshei Knesset Agdolah, and the Gemara will finally answer that they forgot it, and then Shimon Apikoli came back and reestablished it. In terms of who Shimon HaPikuli is, Rashi says Rabbi HaPikuli is his profession. That he was Pakul, which is that he made balls of cotton or put together balls of cotton. So he was a person who made balls of cotton or sold balls of cotton. That's why he was called the Pikuli. Or the other possibility is that that's the place or location that he came from. But Rashi over here suggests that it is his profession. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Vamri Labi Matnita. And again here, Rabbi Yochanan, it's some question as to the girsa here. There are multiple girsaot. If you look at the Rosh, the Rif, others have different girsaot as to who the Bala Memre is, who the attribution is. Rami Labi Matanit Tana, some say it was in a Braita. Mea Veserim Zekenim. There were 120 elders, Behem Kamaniviim, and amongst them were a number of prophets. Tiknu Shmonesre Brachot Ala Seder. They're the ones who put together the Shmonesre Ala Seder. Obviously referencing to the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah. 120 here references the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah. How that exactly works, the 120 of the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, whether they were 120 at one point in time, and that was it, they were not reappointed, and the 120 until they're finished, because we have in the Mishnah Navot that Shimon HaTzadik Haya Misharei Knesset HaGdolah, that he's left over. What do you mean he's left over? Because he's one of the 120, but he's the last of the 120 to be alive or to be left over. Or is it a body that had replacements, that when people passed away, then they were replaced, and then eventually the body is dissolved or is no longer functioning, and that's what it means, Misharei Anshei Knesset HaGdolah. But we know that at least begins in the time of Ezra and Nehemiah, at that period of time, because we see here that there are Nevi'im amongst them, so it's got to be the latter Nevi'im that are amongst those that are part of the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah. And here the Gemara feels that these are the founders or the ones who put together what we know as Shemoneh Esrei, as the tefillah that we have today. Now the Gemara is going to discuss the order of all the brachot here. Now Tosafot over here speaks about the fact that he's dear, that there's an order to Shemoneh Esrei, and that the Gemara here says that if you read Shemoneh Esrei the Mafreya out of order, then you're not Yotzei. The Tosafot over here brings proof to a machloket that he has with Rashi in the Gemara in Brachot, because the Gemara in Brachot indicates that with regards to the first three Brachot and the last three Brachot, they have to be done al Seder. But the middle Brachot don't have to be done al Seder. So the way Rashi explains it is literally. He says the first three Brachot, last three Brachot have to be in order, exactly the order that they're given. If you don't do it, you have to repeat them. Whereas the middle Brachot, if you skip a Bracha, you can go back, fix, say that Bracha that you skipped, and then just continue on from where you are, which would indicate that you can do it the Mafreya. Tosafot says over here from the Gemara, it sounds like that's not the case. Because here it says about all the 18 brachot that they were his dear, they set them up, and then Gemara uses that as a reference to the fact that you can't do them mafrei, you can't do them out of order. There's an order to the brachot, including the middle brachot. And therefore, Tosafot explains that statement in the Gemara brachot differently. He says, with regards to the first three and the last three brachot, if you do them out of order, if you make a mistake in them, you have to start from the beginning. Meaning that that set or section of brachot are a single unit. So if you make a mistake in the first three brachot, you have to go back to the first bracha. In the last three brachot, if you make a mistake in them, you have to go back to the beginning of those three brachot, those three last brachot. So any mistake in them forces you back to the beginning of that unit. On the other hand, when it comes to the middle brachot, if you make a mistake or you skip something, all you have to do is go back to that bracha and then continue onward. You don't have to go back to the beginning of Atachonein, the beginning of the brachot of the middle section. You just go back to whatever problem you had, whatever bracha you missed. You start from there, and then you move forward from there. So he says, unlike Rashi, they have to be read in order. You can't just read them anytime you want, but you don't have to return to the beginning of that series. So that's the difference between the first three, last three, and the middle brachot. And that's how Tosafot uses our Gemara as a proof to his position with regards to the Gemara in brachot. So Tarabanan, minayin shomim avot. How do you know that we say avot? Shinamar. So here the Gemara quotes the Tehillim Chavtet that we say every week in Kabbalat Shabbat. We also say when we put away the Torah on Shabbat. But here we have the Shem Hashem, which is mentioned 18 times there, which is a reference to the Shemoneh Esrei. That's part of the reason that we stand up when we say this Perek of Tehillim. Over there, we've discussed this before in the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, which is Havu Lashem Bnei Elim, should ascribe to Hashem Bnei Elim, the strong ones, the sons of the strong ones. And over there we learned that Elim refers to the Elei Olam, the strong ones, the rocks of the world, which were the Avot. Menayin Shomrim Givurot. How do you know after Avot comes Givurot? Shneimar Avod Hashem Kavod Va'oz. You should give Hashem Kavod, glory, Va'oz, and strength. So that refers to Givura. And that's again, these are in the order of the Psukim. Here's the first Pasuk in that Perek. And then the second pasuk in that parak is Minayin Shomim Kedusha. How do we know that we say Kedushot afterwards? Shinemar says, Havu Hashem Kivod Shemo, that you should give to Hashem the glory of His name. Yishtach with Hashem Behadrat Kodesh. You should bow down to, you should worship Hashem in the beauty of holiness. So here you have the first three brachot, or the source for the fact that the first three brachot go in this way, which is Avot, Magen Avraham, Gvurot, Atah Gibor, the Lama Hashem, that also has the mention of Mashiva Ruach, Amurid HaGoshem, which is the rain that we learn in the Gemara in Tanit, is associated with Gvura. And that ends with Mechayei Amitim. And then the third bracha is Kedushat HaKadosh, and ends with Akel HaKadosh. So that's the order for the first three brachot, based on the Perek Tehillim of Chavtet, where it has that order in placing the brachot of Avot, Gvurot, and then Kedushat. Now, Ma'alam Ra'ul Omar Bina Achar Kedushah. So now we move into the middle section of Brachot. How do you know to say Atachonein Adam Da'at after you finish off with Akela Kadosh? Shinemar, because it says in Yishayahu, V'gdishu et Kadosh Yaakov, V'et Adokei Yisrael Yaritzu. So they will sanctify the holiness of Yaakov, V'et Adokei Yisrael, and the God of Israel, Yaritzu, they will revere. V'samichlei, and then it says right afterwards, V'edu to'ei ruach bina. And those that were lost or misunderstood, have gone off the derech, will then clearly understand who the real God is and who the nation of Hashem is. So you see there that understanding comes after you have the Yaritsu, after you have the Kedusha and the reverence of Hashem. So after Kedusha comes understanding, Bina, which is Atachonein Adam Da'at, Unameid Lenosh Bina. Umalumar Raul Omar Tshuva Achar Bina. How do you know to say the next bracha, or it's b'tshuva after the bracha of Chonein Da'at? Tichtiv, because it says in Yishayahu, again, Ulevavo Yavin, Vishav V'rafalo. Hashem is bemoaning the fact that Bnei Yisrael don't do this. He's saying that if just Levavo Yavin, if he would just understand, Vishav and do tshuva, V'rafalo, and then I would heal him. So that's why, right after Havana, or after Bina, understanding, we have tshuva, Vashav. Where it says, Ihochi. Well, that pasuk is interesting because then it puts the order like this. It puts in Bina, which is Chonein Da'at. Then in Shav, which is Arotze B'tshuva. And then it says, V'rafalo. That would be Rofei Kol Basar. So my ass, Lema Rafua Batra D'tshuva. That's the case. Then Rafua, that bracha of Rofei Kol Amo Yisrael, should follow the bracha of Arotze B'tshuva. It says, Losaka Da'atcha Dichtiv. Because you have another pasuk which says, V'yashov El Hashem V'rachameyu. So here you have a juxtaposition of V'yashov El Hashem, that one who returns to Hashem V'yirachameyu, and he will have mercy upon him. V'elokeinu, and to God ki yarbeh lisloach, because he gives abundant pardons. But here you see, first of all, V'yashov, which is a rotzei b'tshuva, and right afterwards lisloach, which would be the order of the brachot that we have, which is tshuva and then slicha. My says, Umay chazit samacht. Aha. Why are you using this pasuk as the definitive proof? Samuch aha. Why don't you use the older proof as pasuk? Why do you know that this pasuk's right that has slicha after tshuva? Why don't you use the pasuk that has refuah after tshuva? How do you know which one of these is right? My says, Ktav karachrina. We have a third pasuk that proves our point, which is, Hasaleach l'chol avonechi, harufe l'chol tachalu aichi. The one who gives slicha to all of our iniquities, gives forgiveness for all of our iniquities, harufe l'chol tachalu aichi. Then the one who brings refuah, cures or heals all of our sicknesses or diseases, hagoel mishachat chayaichi. And the one who redeems our lives from the depths. So over here you have refuah clearly coming after slicha. So this third pasuk is a machriya. The machriya is that refuah follows slicha. So now the order that we have is bina, chonein adat. Then we have tshuva, which is a rotze b'tshuva. Then we have slicha, chanun amar beli sloach. Then we're going to have refuah, according to this. Refuah should come afterwards. And now the Gemara wants to understand that. So now, Gemara, de geula urufa batar slicha. From that pasuk, we know that geula and refuah come after slicha. Vachtiv. What are you going to do with the pasuk v'shav v'rafalo? Ha'ulav refuah d'tachluimi. That's not the refuah that you thought from diseases, el refuah d'slichahi. That is a cure of slicha. So in order to reconcile with that pasuk that brings refuah after tshuva, Gemara says that that refuah, that healing over there is not the healing in the physical sense, that's a healing from a sinning sense. That just like there are healing, or there's a doctor for someone who is sick physically, there's also healing or a doctor for someone who is spiritually sick. And so that's what the refuah here, the refuah is the pardon or the slicha that comes for the sins. So Mar says, Umar ra'ul umar gula b'shvit. So then why does gula, the seventh bracha, why does that come before refuah? Because both in the pasuk over here that we just quoted, which is a rofe l'chol tachlu aichi, gul mishach l'chayaichi, which is again, refuah comes before gula. And that would imply that refuah should be first. So Amarava mitok shadim ligael b'shvit. The reason that geula precedes refuah is because geula will take place in the seventh year, or b'shvit, in a year of shvit. So the fikach kavua b'shvit. Therefore, they made Goel Yisrael the seventh bracha to reference the seventh year, the shmita year, in which the geula will take place. This is based on a Gemara in Sanhedrin that talks about the cycle that leads into the time of the geula. It says, V'amamar b'shishit kolot. Then in the sixth year, you have all these voices, these sounds. B'shvit milchamot. In the seventh year, you have battles. You have war. B'motzei Shvit ben David ba. In the Motzei Shvit, the year after Shvit, that's when Mashiach comes. So what are you talking about? He comes during the Shvit. So my answer is here, Milchama nami atchalta de geulahi. Battle or war is a precursor to redemption. It is something that precedes redemption. Or it's an indicator of the fact that redemption is on its way. So the fact that the seventh year has a war in it, the Shvi'it has a war in it, that's already means that we're in the footsteps, we're approaching the Ge'ula, and therefore Goel Yisrael, the bracha, is placed as the seventh bracha to correlate with that parallel to the fact that Ge'ula will be in the seventh year. Again, it's very interesting that, again, in the previous century and into this century, that there have been so many battles, wars, significant wars that took place. Now the Gemara asks, why do you have to say Refuah as the eighth bracha? Now it's interesting because we already knew that Refuah came after Tshuva, after Slicha, and the only reason we inserted Geulah there was because it was the seventh, and to match it with the seventh. So obviously Refuah would be next. So now why is the Gemara asking, why is Refuah the eighth? So, of course it's the eighth, because that's the next bracha, and that's where you're going to place it. So here the Gemara says, some say, like the Marsha over here suggests, that the fact that we allowed Refuah to be knocked off, that Geulah was the seventh bracha, is because of the reason we just spoke about. But why does that override the fact that Refuah should come after the Slicha? So my answer is because there's also a reason to put Refuah as the eighth bracha. And that's what the Gemara is saying here. Refuah also is, makes sense, or has a reason to be the eighth bracha. And the other possibility is the fact that Geulah is equally appropriate to be in the seventh and the eighth year. Because we just said now that the Milchama, the battles, are at Chatla de Geulah. But the Geulah itself really takes place in the eighth year. So Geulah could fit in the seventh or eighth. So why do we put Refuah as the eighth? So that's what the Gemara is asking now. What's the Refuah? Why is Refuah the eighth? And others suggest now that the problem here is that once we knocked off Refuah from being next to Slicha, then why would you put it as the eighth bracha? I mean, what connection does it have anymore? And that's the question of the Gemara over here, which is, why do you have the bracha of Refuah b'shminit? Amar Rabbi Yochanan Tok Shenitna Mila b'shminit Shetzricha Refuah. So that's a connection to Brit Mila, which is on the eighth day, which requires healing. So that's why Refuah is the eighth bracha. And that's why they established it as the eighth bracha in Shmoneh Esrei, because of that connection to Brit Mila. Why is Birkat Hashanim the ninth bracha? So Amar Rabbi Alexandri keneged mafkiei she'arim. That is going against the people who are, I guess, monopolizers, who corner the market and force the prices up. So these are people who are causing the market price to rise, but artificially. They're creating artificial squeezes on the market prices. It's not that the market itself is really there at that price, but somehow they are able either to corner the market or they control the market to the point where they bring the prices way up. And these people who do that, they affect the poor people the most, because they are the people that are most hurt by the fact that the prices rise. And those are the basic staples of individuals, and those prices, as the prices of basic staples rise, that affects the poor or the lowest socioeconomic class the most. That's actually what gave rise to the Arab Spring, is the fact that basic staples and products, the prices started to rise in all these places, and that put the possibility of livelihood out of the reach for many of the people at the bottom of the rung. And therefore they started to revolt or rebel against their governments because they couldn't live anymore. They had no possibility of surviving once the staple products, the prices go beyond their means or beyond their reach. So Dichtiv, it says, Shvor Zro Rasha. The Hashem should break the arms of the Rasha, of those that are evil. And over there, the Ra that we're talking about there is those that are bad, or those that are evil towards the poor or the underprivileged. And again, that's referring to the Mafkia She'arim. Ve David Ki Amra. And when David says this pasuk, b'tshiit amra, he says it in the ninth perek of Tehillim. Well, if you take a quick look in the Masoret Tashas on the side here in the Torah Or says, you know what Perek Shvor Zra Rasha is in? The 10th Perek of Tehillim. So why is the Gemara here calling it the 9th Perek? So the answer is based on a Gemara in Brachot that tells us that the first two Prakim and Tehillim are actually one Perek Tehillim. They're not two separate Tehillim, because there the Gemara says it starts with Ashrei, ends with Ashrei. The only way you can find that is if you put the first two Prakim and Tehillim together. So when you put those together, then actually this Tehillim that we're quoting over here is not the 10th, but rather the 9th Perek of Tehillim, and that would match up. Rashi has what's seemingly strange. He says, isn't it the 8th, not the 9th? So then you have to suggest there you can see on the side in the Masoret Tashas that he has a different gears in Rashi, and Tosafot discussed it as well, the possibility that there's another two Prakim in the first 10 that would be doubled up, meaning that they were combined, and that was why it would make it the 8th. So the Gemara says, no, don't make it the 8th. Those two are really separate, and therefore you have 9. It's only the first two that are put together as a single Perek of Tehillim, and that's why this is the 9th Perek in Tehillim. Since it's the 9th Perek of Tehillim, that's why Birkat HaShanim is the 9th Bracha, because there we're talking about the basic staples and livelihood of individuals, and that people should not ruin that for those that are of lesser means. And then that's the offset. The offset to the fact that people are trying to monopolize or raise the market prices is that there's plenty. If Hashem is Mavarech HaShanim, and there's bountiful crops, and there's so much there, that it's impossible, very hard for people to corner the markets or force the pricing up, because there's just so much produce that's out there. We cave in. So after that, Ma'arul Omar Kibbutz Galiot Achar Birkat HaShanim. Why is the bracha after Mevorech HaShanim now Mikabetz Nidche Amo Yisrael? Tichtiv, because of the pasuk in Yechezkel, again a very famous pasuk that we live in our times, Vatem Hare Yisrael, and you, the mountains of Israel, Anfechem Titeno, let your branches come forth, Ofer Yechem Tis'ul Ami Yisrael, and your fruits you shall yield for my nation Israel. Because they are soon to approach, they are soon to come. So again, the idea that the land of Israel will begin to blossom and become super productive in anticipation of the return of the people. Again, something in Baruch Hashem that we've been able to witness in our lifetime, the tremendous productivity and yields and the fruits and the development of the land of Israel, something that has not been seen in more than 2,000 years, the flourishing of the land of Israel. Which again is another tremendous sign of the movement of the Gula based on that pasuk in Yechezkel. So now, obviously, Kiker Vulavo means that they're soon to approach, means that they're going to come. The Kevin Shinit Kubsua Galiot, and after all the Galiot come together, and we, again, don't need any more proof of that since the fall of the Berlin Wall in the late 80s. Till today, then there's been a tremendous kibbutz galiot, an unprecedented aliyah to Eretz Yisrael. Naseh din birishayim. Then after there is kibbutz galiot, there is din dan birishayim. And minyana diyoma, the Gemara here is going to quote from the first parak in Yishayahu, which is the haftorah for Shabbat Chazon. It's a haftorah that we're going to read in this week on the Shabbat before Tisha B'Av. It says there, Mashiva yadi alayich. Vetzrof kabur sigayich. Then I'm going to return my hand upon you, and I will smelt your dross like the lye. Uchtiv. And then the pasuk afterwards says, Vashiva shoftayich varishona. I'm going to bring back your judges like in the beginning. Vekeven shenaseh din min harishayim, kalo aposhim, vekolel zedim mehem. Then the rishayim disappear, and all the sinners are gone, everything goes together. Shenamar, as the pasuk says, v'shever pushim v'chataim yachdav, the destruction of those that transgress as well as those that are sinners will happen together, will happen simultaneously. V'ozevei Hashem yichlu, and those that leave Hashem will be consumed or destroyed. Now, here we have actually in Psukim in order. We quoted pasuk chavhei, which is in Yishayahu, the first parak, which is Shiva yadi alayach v'tzrof kabor sigayach. Then we quote a pasuk chavav, which is a shiva shoftayach harishona, which is the turn of the shofatim. We skip the pasuk, which is pasuk chavzayin, which is important, which is Zion b'mishpat tipadeh v'shaveh b'tzdaka. And then the final pasuk that we just quoted here is the pasuk Kavchet, which is v'sheva poshim v'chadim yachdav v'sveh Hashem yichlu. And that gives us the order of the brachot over here, which is, first of all, after the bracha of Kibbutz Galiot, we have Hashiva Shofteinu. And we say in that, Melech Oed Tztaka U'Mishpat. Tztaka U'Mishpat comes from that pasuk of Tzion B'Mishpat Tipadeh, V'Shaveh B'Tztaka. So that's the nature of the bracha that we're speaking about there. And then after that, we have the Rishayim getting eliminated, which is the elimination of those that are problematic through the judgment of the adjudication, and that's Lamashini Mati Tikva. Even though that bracha is added later on, it's embedded in the Hashiva Shofteinu, because the Shoftim are going to come and adjudicate these issues and get rid of the Rishayim. And later on, we add on Lamashini as well. Bekevin Shekalu Aposhim. Once we get rid of all the transgressors, the sinners, Mitromumet, Karen Tzadikim, then the horn of the Tzadikim rises, Dichtiv. Because the pasuk says in Tehillim, V'chol karnei rishayim agadeya, the horns of the rishayim I will cut off, Tiromamna karnot tzadik, but I will exalt the horns of the tzadikim. So the two are correlated. The downfall, the cutting off of the horns of the rishayim are associated with also the exalting or the rising of the karnot of the tzadikim. And that's why the brocha of ala tzadikim comes afterwards. V'kolel gerei tzadikim atzadikim. Not only does the bracha of tzaddikim deal with tzaddikim, it also deals with gerei tzedek, which we note in our bracha, shenemar, because the pasuk tells us in Vayikra and Parshat Kedoshim, mipnei seva takum, vadarta pnei zakein, samech levi chi yagur yitchem ger. So mipnei seva takum, vadarta pnei zakein, talking about a zakein and those that are wise, that you have to stand up before them, you have to honor them, talmidei chachamim and tzaddikim, right next to it or juxtaposed, that is chi yagur yitchem ger, if there's a convert amongst you. So the convert is associated with the tzaddikim, and therefore in the bracha, they're put together in the bracha of ala tzaddikim. So then, from there we move on to, v'heichan mitromimet karnot karnam b'Yerushalayim. Where is their horn to rise, and where is it exalted? Of course, in Yerushalayim, shenemar, because it says, shalu shalom Yerushalayim, should pray for the peace of Yerushalayim, Ishlayu ohavayich, your beloved will prosper there in Yerushalayim. So we're talking about the tzaddikim and the exalting and the rising of the tzaddikim that, of course, will take place in Yerushalayim, where those that are beloved to Hashem prosper. Bekevin shenivneit Yerushalayim ba David. And now, once Yerushalayim is built, then David comes, meaning the Mashiach comes, because we have the pasuk the shenemar achar yashuvu bnei Israel. Uvikshu et Hashem Elokehem ve David Makam. After Bnei Israel do tshuva, they will search out Hashem their God, ve David Makam, and David their king. So you see that you have the return to Yerushalayim, and once Bnei Israel are there, they're going to search for Hashem and David Makam. So their David Makam is the next stage in that process, and that's why after Bnei Yerushalayim, you have et Semach David. Bekevin Shabbat David, Bata Tfila. And once David comes, then prayer comes, shenemar, v'aviotim el har kodshi, I'll bring them to my holy mountain, v'simachtim b'veit tfilati, and they will rejoice or celebrate in the house of my prayer. That's why the next bracha is shomea tfila. V'kevan shabbat tfila bat avoda. And once prayer comes, so does service, or the worship of Hashem, shenemar, because that pasuk continues, Olotehem v'rizivcheichem l'ratzon ha-mizbichei, that the olot and zvachim will then be accepted or appropriate for my mizbeach. V'kevan shebat avudah, bat todah. And once you have avudah, then thanks comes, which is the bracha afterwards. After we have the avudah, the bracha of ritzei, we have the bracha of modim, which is the bracha of todah, shenemar, because it says in Tehillim, zoveach todah yichabdenani. The one who offers up praise or thanks gives honor or glorifies me. So the Gemara is reading Zoveach being a Zvicha, Korban, and then only afterwards, Toda, thank you. Umara ulomar Birkat Kohanim achar Hoda. Why do they say Birkat Kohanim after Hoda? Dechtiv. Because it says, Vayisa Aron et Yadav. Aron raises up his hands. Elaam. Vayivarachem. And he blesses them. Vayered masota chatat, and he comes down from doing the chatat, ve'aulav elashlamim. So now Gemara says, Ema kodem avuda. From the pasuk here, it sounds like you would do this before avuda. You have Aaron giving the bracha, birkat kohenim to the am. And then he comes down from doing the avoda, which is the chatat ula shlamim, which indicate that birkat kohenim should be before avoda. And it says, lo sakadatra. Dichtiv, because it says, ve'yered me'asot achatat. He came down from doing the chatat. Miktiv le'asot. He doesn't come down from doing, but me'asot. After you already had done the avoda aktiv. So that indicates that the avoda is already complete. At the point that he is doing the bracha, and he's giving the bracha, the avoda me'asot, he's already completed the avoda. He's already completed the avoda, so it's after avoda. Gemara says, v'lim ra'achar avoda. If that's the case, why don't you say birkat kohanim immediately after avoda, and not after avoda? Because you have that correlation between zvicha avoda and toda. Gemara says, my chazit to samach tahai, samuch ahai. Why are you giving precedence to one pasuk over the other? So he says, Mistavro, avoda v'hoda chada miltihi. Avoda tashem, and giving thanks to Hashem is one item. As Rashi explains over here, what does that mean, they're one item? Avoda avoda shomakomi. Saying thank you to Hashem and giving praise to Hashem, that's a part of avoda, and therefore it's an extension of avoda. So why is the final bracha sim shalom after birkat kohanim? Dichtiv. You'll place my name on Bnei Yisrael and bless them. That's the pasuk that's written by Birkat Kohanim. Bracha da kosh baruch hu shalom. Because the bracha of Hashem is shalom. So if you'll place my name on Bnei Yisrael and then I will bless them. So the Birkat Kohanim engenders the bracha of Hashem. It brings the bracha of Hashem. What is the bracha of Hashem? Sim shalom. Shneamar Hashem yivarech. Et amo b'shalom, that Hashem blesses his nation with peace. So shalom is the bracha of Hashem, and that's the response to the Birkat Kohanim. And Hashem's response to the Birkat Kohanim is to bring the bracha of shalom, and that's why we say sim shalom, because that is the proper response to Birkat Kohanim, is the request for that sim shalom, the bracha of shalom. Right, so here we just explained the reason for the order of the Shmoneser Brachot, as well as the fact that they must be said ala seder. The fact that there's a reason why they're in this order also indicates that the order is important. And that's why you can't read the Shmoneh Esrei l'mafreya. So now we had a proof for all of these items that Megillah, Hallel, Kriyat Shema, and Shmoneh Esrei all have to be read in order. And if one reads them out of order, then they're not Yotzei. Okay, we're going to stop over here and we'll continue with the Gemara tomorrow.